payback is heck.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Uncle Sam came up with a troubled asset relief program, TARP, to bolster bank books and, in light of the fallout, make sure they could continue to loan and, more importantly, stay open. Now some banks want to repay the TARP they took, but it's not as easy as just giving the money back. And as early as today, we're going to hear about all the stipulations. From Washington, Tamara Keith reports.
Banks are not big fans of the restrictions on executive compensation and other government pressures that come with the TARP funds. Plus, some see the program as a mark of weakness. But government officials have been reluctant to allow banks to rapidly return their bailout funds. They don't want banks to repay and then discover they aren't strong enough to keep lending. So the new guidelines will require banks to prove they can stand on their own. One thing they'd reportedly have to give up is the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation's debt guarantee, which allows banks to borrow at a fairly low rate. Banks have borrowed more than $300 billion since last fall with the assistance of this program. For some, this added condition will make it tough to get out of the TARP. In Washington, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
Bank of America could need as much as $34 billion in additional capital. That's according to the results of a government stress test, according to a source familiar with those results. The figure more than triples previously published reports of B of A's capital needs. A spokesman for the company declined comment. A mixed bag for stocks. Most stock markets here in this country lost a little ground yesterday. The Dow lost about 0.2%, about 16 points to close at 84.10. The NASDAQ down about 10 points, 0.5%. And the S&P 500 down about 0.3% yesterday. Asian markets were mixed. Hong Kong shares rose 2.5%. The Nikkei reopens tomorrow. And European markets are up an average of about 0.5% right now. The Boston Globe and its largest union have reportedly reached a deal to cut costs and keep the newspaper in business. And that has other businesses in Beantown breathing way easier, namely advertisers. Some had been scrambling to figure out what to do in case the paper folded. Kurt Nickisch reports.
For all the talk about declining ad revenue in the newspaper industry, it's still substantial. By sticking around, the Boston Globe will probably sell a few $100 million worth of ads this year. Lisa Adams works for a local ad buying agency. She says even with online advertising booming, it would be tough for her clients to drop the Globe. After all, she says, the paper lands on hundreds of thousands of doorsteps a day, and it reaches 500,000 households on the weekend.
On Sunday, those families are sitting down, they're holding that paper, and you've got somebody's full attention. For that reason, you typically are going to have better impact.
But not every advertiser is relieved by the Globe's new lease on life. Car dealer Ernie Bach Jr. says his ad buys with the paper have fallen off considerably since its heyday.
In the 80s and early 90s, the Globe was it. King. Nobody sold more cars than the Globe.
If anything, Bach says, the newspaper's brush with death has only ended up scaring advertisers. The Globe may be staying around, but it's probably going to have a smaller reach and a different look once management gets done with cutting costs. In Boston, I'm Kurt Nickisch for Marketplace.
Forget Walmart's big super centers. Now the world's top retailer wants to be big with small. Like convenience store small. The company opened 3 Smart Choice stores in China a few months back, and reports are it has plans to open hundreds more in the next 5 years. Convenience store behemoth 7-Eleven just opened its first store in Shanghai recently. And while Walmart says in China it plans to focus on its big store business, mostly you gotta wonder whether size really does matter.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. And by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build stronger customer relationships through email marketing. ConstantContact.com.
General Motors faces a government deadline at the end of this month to complete its restructuring or face bankruptcy. Sound familiar? Chrysler just came off the same type of deadline. For GM, part of the hurdle is getting bondholders to swap billions of dollars in debt for a 10% equity stake. It's part of a plan laid out by President Obama and his auto task force. The GM CEO Fritz Henderson insists the government is not running the company, but commentator Will Wilkinson says it's clear who's calling the shots.
I don't want to run the auto companies and I don't want to run banks, President Obama said last week during a primetime press conference on the fate of Detroit. He may not want to, but the Obama administration is effectively running auto companies and banks. And the president does get a bit cranky when he tells the private sector to jump, and it doesn't jump. In a rare flash of anger, Obama lashed out at several Chrysler investors who refused to sign on to the administration's restructuring plan for the automaker. The plan would have required senior investors, who are usually first in line in bankruptcy proceedings, to take big losses, while more junior investors, including the UAW, were offered rather more generous terms. The failure of the plan has left Chrysler no other option than to file for bankruptcy. But why is the president involved at all in deciding who gets what in the breakup of an auto company? Much of the American economy is in disarray, but the bankruptcy system isn't. Indeed, the U.S. bankruptcy system works really well. So why meddle when an effective, long-standing legal system can take care of it? This is the price of bailout mania. When the government gets its finger in every pie, who gets what piece becomes a political decision. We may want to trust our leaders to be dispassionate stewards of the public interest, but politicians, and our overempowered executive is a politician, will use whatever discretion is at hand to reward their constituencies. Justice wears a blindfold for a reason. Injecting political partisans directly into economic decisions when well-functioning, time-tested rules are in place not only chills the confidence of investors, but moves us one step further from the already battered rule of law and one step closer to the dangerous rule of men.
Will Wilkinson is a research fellow at the Cato Institute. Share your thoughts with us at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.